This episode of Metatrex is brought to you by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
There's no greater challenge than the study of philosophy.
My philosophy is that there is room for all philosophies on this station.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 57 of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. My name is Zachary Fruling, and with me, as always, is Mike Morrison. Today, we'll be discussing the third season Voyager episode, Sacred Ground. Mike, how are you today?
I'm feeling particularly spiritual today, Zachary. I'm doing well, and I'm ready for the challenges.
Well, I did come prepared. I came with a stone for you to hold. I came with a basket for you to put your hand into, any number of other different challenges. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I figured, you know, I would at least come prepared considering we're going to be talking about Sacred Ground from Voyager Season 3. So here we are.
I actually had mixed thoughts about talking about Sacred Ground today, partly because we already did a previous episode of Metatrex on the science and religion debate way back in Metatrex episode 8 called It's Turtles All the Way Down. But we did have one of our associate producers and my co-host of To the Journey, Trek FM's Voyager podcast, with us on Metatrex last week. And after the show, she had suggested that she would like to hear us talk about Sacred Ground. And that got me thinking, okay, Sacred Ground, we've already talked about science and religion. Do we really have something new to talk about when we talk about Sacred Ground? But as I rewatched Sacred Ground, I started to realize that Sacred Ground really does cover different territory than the previous discussion we had on the science and religion debate. To me, when I rewatched Sacred Ground, it occurred to me that the main focus of that episode is more about private, individual religious experience as opposed to scientific explanations, but the focus seems to be more on the ineffable, unshareable private religious experience that Captain Janeway has inside that episode.
Absolutely. I was really excited when Kay mentioned this because this is actually one of my favorite episodes of Voyager, and not for the reason, Zachary, I think a lot of people would think. Everyone knows that, you know, my background is religion, theology, and so I think there's maybe an expectation out there that I'm going to automatically gravitate towards stories that have an underlying mystical or religious nature to it. And actually, the reason why I gravitate to this particular episode is because it is a personal journey of discovery for Captain Janeway. And it's not so much trying to really answer any question as far as science versus religion, but rather it's her own personal discovery to more or less break out of her comfort zone. She is a trained scientist, but sometimes out there in the universe, there are just things that don't make sense. This story, Zachary, was actually pitched by a freelancer named Geo Cameron, and we all know that this was Robbie Duncan McNeil's directorial debut. So, we had a freelance writer and the story was adapted from a story that he pitched, and it was given to Robbie Duncan McNeil to direct. And, you know, the end result, I think, was something really fantastic that wasn't your typical juxtaposition between science and religion. I think it was something very unique that stands on its own in a really special way.
I think you could argue that Captain Janeway learns as much, if not more, about herself and her own biases and her own assumptions and her own habitual reactions to new information and new stimuli that she does about anything having to do with this particular religion, the Nakani's religion, or anything about the divine in particular, even though ostensibly the focus of the episode is on science and religion.
Positively. And I have to say, Zachary, that really I think this story, Sacred Ground, was really written for us, for Metatrax, because even Lisa Klink, who was a staff writer for Voyager, said that the story that was originally pitched, they took that concept, and she really struggled as a writer adapting that concept into a workable teleplay. She said, quote, "It was very tricky." And she admitted that because it was obviously very talky and philosophical, and you really had to pay attention to really keep up with what was going on, that was really hard to convey in the scripts. And she said that it was one of the most difficult things that she ever read. Well, when I read that from Lisa Klink, the staff writer there for Voyager, I thought to myself, this is perfect, because this is very character-driven. This isn't a shoot-'em-up. There are no space battles. No one fires phasers in this. It really is an exploration purely of, you know, one's own personal philosophy. And I think it was brilliantly done.
Do you think that Voyager in this case was veering a little close to Deep Space Nine territory? As I was watching the episode and thinking about the Nakani, the main alien race in this episode, it occurred to me that they really are like the Bajorans of the Delta Quadrant. They've got their spiritual devices and they've got their spirits, and which are analogous to the prophets in Deep Space Nine. They're very much like the Bajorans. Do you think this was veering into being a little too close to what the territory that Deep Space Nine was trying to cover?
I think perhaps there are definitely some parallels that can be drawn, but I think it was very unique in and of itself. I certainly think that you can find similarities between what Captain Janeway goes through in this single episode, and you can kind of draw some similarities to what Sisko goes through throughout the course of Deep Space Nine. So in that, this episode is really kind of a crucible for Captain Janeway, as opposed to, you know, what we see Sisko go through in the entire run of Deep Space Nine. But there are some similarities, but I still think that this one really stands alone in its approach. Robbie Duncan McNeil talked about in an interview that this was an extremely spiritual show. He said about Captain Janeway having to let go of logic and learn to take a deep leap of faith and consider the magical, mystery, godlike elements of the world. He said it was one of those episodes that was, you know, very much a thinking person's episode. It was a moody piece. You know, it wasn't a big shoot 'em up. It was a story of ideas, of feelings, of character journeys. And I think if the story fell short in any way, it was the fact that this was such a definitive episode for the character of Catherine Janeway, but it was something that probably should have been explored over an arc or over a season, as opposed to really kind of cramming this in and really in some respects blowing up her worldview all in one little episode. Very rarely in life do we, you know, have a day in our life that completely disassembles our worldview and changes our way of thinking. We kind of see that happen on the screen for Captain Janeway, and that makes it a little tough to swallow.
The early seasons of Voyager seem to take every opportunity to drive home the point that Captain Janeway is a scientist first and foremost. I mean, she's about to go on a religious quest here for all intents and purposes, and she's bringing her tricorder and, as the Nakari representative put it, her little devices, right? Mm-hmm. So that says a lot about Captain Janeway. You know, if she's going to have a spiritual or religious experience in any way, shape, or form, anything she doesn't understand, she wants to be able to measure it and quantify it. And that's Captain Janeway's worldview, and she says as much inside the episode. And I think it's a really interesting question. What happens when a scientist has a religious experience or a spiritual experience that doesn't fit neatly inside the scientific worldview? I think Captain Janeway's reaction says a lot. Every time she experiences something she doesn't understand inside this episode, she is trying to give her own attempt at a scientific explanation, you know, in terms of biochemistry or energy sources, things she can measure, and everything has to fit inside that paradigm for her. And I just think it's a fascinating psychological question. What happens when a scientist who's steeped in that worldview, I don't even want to say a logical worldview, just the assumption that that different phenomena have an explanation that can be grounded in things that we understand, quantified and measured, and fundamental physical principles and whatnot. What happens when something doesn't fit neatly inside that worldview. So I think there's a few options. One option is just disbelief. You can just reject it as a mere illusion, or you can go trying to prove that the experience was real in some way, go looking for scientific evidence like Captain Janeway does, or you could even be converted in some way. And in some sense, Captain Janeway has a bit of a conversion experience inside this episode. She herself tells the doctor, that's a great explanation. It's a very scientific explanation, but she walks away from that conversation looking really skeptical, like she's experienced something ineffable that she can't explain in terms of the scientific paradigm that she lives within. So it's an interesting question. What is the right approach when a scientist steeped in that worldview experiences something that doesn't fit? There's a number of different options. And I think, you know, how an individual person responds is a question of that person's individual psychology. But it's a very interesting question. How should a person respond? What's kind of the logical, rational, justified response epistemically to that kind of new experience that's a private experience that's not shareable with people who didn't experience what you experienced?
Well, Zachary, I've often said that everyone has faith in something. I've had various arguments presented to me regarding that personal philosophy, but I truly believe that everyone has faith in something. And for Captain Janeway, it is faith that everything in the universe is quantifiable. It's all in her ability to use science to explain everything. In fact, the three spiritual figures that she's sitting in a room with kind of present that to her. You know, you like your gizmos and gadgets, and you want to quantify everything and measure everything. And so that's what she has faith in. And so this episode is about the difficulty that she has in taking a leap of faith. You know, as a scientist, it's not something that's really easy for her to do. And really, the entire episode, she's sort of pushing back against that. And she actually ends up leading herself down a path based on her own preconceived notions of what she's gotten herself into. And I think a lot of people who don't necessarily have a background in religion or faith, and I'm not saying religion, i.e. Christianity, I'm saying religion in general. You don't have any experience with it, and so we all have our preconceived notions about it. I remember as a 19-year-old boy, going and experiencing really church for the first time. I wasn't raised in a Christian home, and so going and really experiencing church and experiencing faith for the first time, and it was. There were a lot of preconceived notions wrapped up in that. There were a lot of expectations that I put upon myself that really weren't something that the church or God or were putting on me, but they were my own preconceived notions and ideas. And so part of my faith journey was, and it wasn't something that happened inside a 42-minute episode. It's something that's literally taking a lifetime, and I'm still going through that transformation where I'm learning to set aside my preconceived notions and learning to live a genuine faith existence. And so for Captain Janeway, she's having to wrestle with her own preconceived notions of what it is she's gotten herself into. And once she's able to set those aside, and it really takes a crisis in the episode for her to truly do that, once she sets those preconceived notions aside, that's the moment when she takes that initial leap of faith. And it's something that at the end of the episode, you think really does change her. You mentioned you thought she had a conversion experience. And I think that's somewhat the picture I think that's being painted. But, no worries, everybody. Next week, she's back to science and technobabble and tricorder readings, and all is well in the scientific universe for Catherine Janeway.
Well, Sacred Ground is interesting to me for at least three different reasons. One, we've already mentioned, it's a personal journey for the character Captain Janeway. So this is an important part of her character development, going from a strictly scientific worldview that we see in the first couple of seasons of Voyager to a more nuanced, more a broader worldview to some degree, you know, this episode does suffer a bit from the Voyager reset button syndrome, right? You know, like you said, in the next episode, there's no evidence that this has actually happened. But,
yes.
You know, it's in some broad sense, it's part of Captain Janeway's individual character development as a character inside a fictional story. So that's interesting. That's one way it's interesting. To me, the second way it's interesting is this descriptive question. What's the psychology? How do people actually respond when they're presented with new stimuli that don't fit their worldview? And that's a purely descriptive account. Like, you know, it's a factual question of how people actually do respond in fact. So that's option number two. And the third reason this episode is interesting to me is I would say the deeper, more philosophical question in this episode. This episode juxtaposes two different modes of explanation for the same experience or the same phenomena. One being a scientific, I don't want to say logical, because, you know, I think anyone who has a more nuanced view of theology besides a purely faith-based irrational view of theology will think that you can give rational explanations inside theology too. So it's not even just a logical worldview. A scientific worldview that's grounded in quantifiable, measurable facts, things you can observe and measure and identify. You know, that mode of explanation versus a religious mode of explanation. And so here we see Captain Janeway having what is essentially a private experience that the rest of the Voyager crew don't share with her. And so the question is that the only mode of explanation, or is there a space to carve out for an alternative mode of explanation, a non-scientific, more spiritual, more religious explanation that doesn't fit neatly into a scientific worldview? And I think here we see Captain Janeway's eyes being opened a little bit to the idea that there's an alternative mode of explanation. And so for me, the deeper question is, well, if we have two competing modes of explanation, what's the relationship between them? Do they compete with each other? Do they contradict each other? Are they purely alternative explanations of the same phenomena that can live side by side without any real conflict? Or is there a way to unify them? And my own conviction has always been that, look, we live in one universe. So if there's a spiritual component to it, if there's a divine, if there's a if there are prophets, if there are spirits, you know, any of the things you see in Deep Space Nine, or in this case, spirits inside this episode, if that's part of the universe in some broad sense, meaning everything that exists, right alongside all the scientific phenomena, shouldn't there be a more unified explanation? So I think there's at least three options. You can say, you know, these are contradictory modes of explanation that just plain contradict each other, so they can't both be true, scientific and spiritual or religious. They can complement each other, two alternative explanations of the same phenomena. One maybe addressing meaning, or one addressing significance, while the other addresses the factual, you know, mechanics of how events unfold. Or there could be an attempt to unify them together into a more unified experience. And I think we see Captain Janeway struggling with that she's recognized that there are two alternative explanations here. There's all of the sciencing the science talk that the doctor gives about how he was able to save Kes's life, and, you know, the biochemistry and the specific type of energy. I forget all the terms that were used in this episode.
Lots of technobabble.
Well, there's lots of technobabble. Voyager technobabble in this episode, absolutely. So for me, I see Captain Janeway struggling with accepting that as the explanation for what's unfolded versus recognizing her own experiences as an alternative means of explanation. And of course, at the end of the episode, we don't see these unified in any significant way. We just see the tension that's unfolded. We see that Captain Janeway has recognized the potential for a different mode of explanation than she's used to giving as a scientist. And for me, I wish the episode just pushed it a little bit further and asked, well, what is the relationship between these two modes of explanation? Are they coherent with each other? Do they contradict each other? Can they be unified? Is it all part of the same universe, different, you know, are there different components to it? You know, whatever it is, I just want that deeper question to be addressed. But that's what we have our show Metatreks for.
Indeed. That's the thing that I really like about this episode, because it really reminds me a lot of, I'm a fan of The X-Files. And matter of fact, my daughter and I are on season 4 of an X-Files rewatch. So forgive me if I wax all Scully and Mulder here. But the thing that I really love about X-Files is at the end of the episode, you're left asking yourself, you know, was it A or was it B? And they present these two things and they give equal, because Mulder is the one who really has faith in these conspiracy theories and the existence of extraterrestrials. And Scully is the scientist. Everything is quantifiable. Everything is measurable. And sometimes they butt heads in the episode about, you know, what it is they're chasing or what it is they're, you know, the problem they're trying to solve, what's behind it all. And, you know, for Mulder, it's always a conspiracy theory or aliens. And for Scully, it's something that can be scientifically explained. And in this episode of Voyager, we really have an X-Files, except in this episode, the part of Scully is played by the Doctor.
Maybe and that's the name he should have adopted. She should have taken the name Dr. Scully.
He should have taken the name Dana Scully. Absolutely. Robert Picardo, if you're listening, Dana Scully would have been a good name. And of course, Catherine Janeway, at the end of the episode, she ends up being Mulder because she's not sure what to make of it. I really love those last lines in the episode when Robert Picardo's doctor is giving a, you know, a technobabble laden explanation to Cass, and he's very proud of himself. And, you know, it had something to do with the chemical reaction in Janeway and when he treated Cass and it insulated them against, and he's explaining it and he turns to Janeway and he says, "Captain, is there something about my analysis you disagree with?" And she said, "It's perfectly sound. It's a perfectly sound explanation, Doctor. Very scientific." And there was a pause there. And so she gets up and, as you said, she walks away from the conversation. And really, as she's walking out, I'm really waiting for do 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 do. Do 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 do, wah 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 wah. It was very X-Files. So at the end of the episode, Zachary, we don't get a definitive answer, and it's really up to the viewer to draw their conclusions.
Well, I do see the parallel with the X-Files, but I think there's a difference. In the X-Files, there's often an outright contradiction between the two explanations. You know, the phenomena that are experienced are so grandiose, they defy the laws of physics so much that it's an actual contradiction. You know, you know Mulder's explanation and Scully's explanation of the same phenomena literally can't both be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think in this episode, it's a subtler relationship between the two modes of explanation. That the fact that the Doctor can give this very coherent explanation of the phenomenon, and Catherine Janeway herself says that's a perfectly valid scientific explanation of it, right? She's not saying that's a bad explanation. It's false. It didn't actually work that way. You know, she notices there's an alternative mode of explanation, but they don't seem to contradict each other in any really, really strong, strong way. I mean, all of the science that the Doctor describes, the biochemistry and the energy, you know, mm-hmm. the sciencing, the science stuff, all of that is still true. So Captain Janeway is not saying, no, it didn't happen that way.
No, not at all. And in fact, as I was about to say, there was a movement several years ago, and I think it's still going on, although I've not seen anything published recently, where a group of interdenominational Christians began to work together to find scientific explanations to the miracles that are recorded in the Christian Bible. And one in particular that I want to mention is in the book of Exodus, we're told that when the Jews, the Hebrews, were leaving Egypt, they came to the Red Sea. And with the army of Egypt coming at them from one direction and the Red Sea at their backs, Moses stretched out his hand and God parted the sea and they walked across. And of course, they were able, you know, over 1 million Jews, 750,000 Jews walk across on dry ground. They get to the other side. Pharaoh takes his army in and the sea collapses in on them and they drown. And so that's as it's written and recorded in the Bible. And that's not the only instance of a water-parting miracle. There's another one in which the priests are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, which is a shrine of sorts, and they are needing to cross the Jordan River, and they come to the Jordan River. Now, this time, as they pray and they look to God, God doesn't immediately part the Jordan River. But in fact, what the Bible records is that they had to take a step of faith. And it's really one of those stories in which we really draw this idea of taking a step of faith. That's where that phrase comes from. They literally had to take a step of faith because the water hadn't parted. So they actually stepped in and got their feet wet before the water parted. Now, there's a scientific explanation, at least for the Red Sea parting. I read it. It's, you know, it's fascinating as all get out. And for me, when I read that and, you know, this very scientific explanation, very quantifiable explanation for how a sea can, you know, part in two and allow people to walk across. Someone asked me when I was sharing that with them, did that in any way diminish or hinder your faith? And I said all that to say this, it really didn't, because whether it's something that could be explained through science or not, it's still remarkable. And there are still things about that story that can't be measured or quantified, that cannot be explained. They're coincidences. And by the way, I don't believe in just, you know, sheer coincidences. So my faith is still very much intact, even though I found concourse with some scientific explanation for how it's possible.
Mike, I'm glad you thought to mention the parting of the Red Sea, because I had actually thought of that specific example as well as I was thinking about the relationship between these alternative modes of explanation. I think there's two different approaches to this. One approach is to say that, look, in by definition, a miracle or something transphysical, spiritual, religious, needs to be a violation of the laws of nature, because if you can just explain everything away in terms of laws of nature, then there's no reason to evoke any other causes for the events besides purely physical causes. So it's an interesting question. Kind of by definition, do spiritual religious experiences and miracles in particular, you know, like the parting of the Red Sea, do they by definition violate the laws of nature? In other words, should the parting of the Red Sea be caused, in the case of the Christian Bible, caused by God, right, as a transphysical spiritual cause of the event that is in contradiction to what we know about the laws of nature? Mm-hmm. Or, as you put it, does the fact that you can try to give a scientific explanation of something that appears miraculous or coincidental, does that actually help strengthen the faith in the religious or spiritual component of that event? And so here, you know, taking that example, you know, these two different approaches to miracles and spiritual experiences, whether they violate the laws of nature or whether they're in harmony with the laws of nature. If you apply that to the Nakani in this episode, or what I'm calling the Delta Quadrant Bajorans, you know,
there's some similarities there, by the way.
If their experiences are transphysical in the sense that the causes of the events that Captain Janeway experiences and the Akane in general experience, if those aren't fully explainable in terms of physical causes, then that seems more like a divine cause of the events in the sense of violating laws of nature or having non-physical causes of the events. On the other hand, you could, you know, the fact that the doctor can give a fully scientific explanation of what's unfolded and how Kes gets cured, that sounds like it's a little more in line with the second option, which is to say, to use the Red Sea as the parallel, the fact that you can give a physical explanation for the parting of the Red Sea, if you can give a fully physical explanation without invoking any metaphysical or spiritual non-physical causes of the events, if the doctor can do that consistently, and it seems like Captain Janeway is admitting that he can do that. She's not saying his explanation is wrong, right?
And that's the beauty of the end of that episode. She's not saying he's wrong, but obviously something's affected her insights.
On the other hand, there really is something to this idea that, look, in order to justify, epistemically and philosophically justify invoking a higher level, non-physical, metaphysical cause of an event, there needs to be something that physical causes alone can't explain. Otherwise, there's no need to invoke that as an extra cause above and beyond the physical. I mean, this is the problem with all higher order causes. You get this problem in philosophy of mind, trying to explain mental causation of physical events. You get this in philosophy of religion, trying to explain spiritual or theological causes of what are ostensibly physical events. Mm-hmm. And so we've mentioned this tension before. It's a question of reductionism versus higher order causes. If you can constantly explain away higher level causes in terms of lower level causes, then there's the danger that you don't need to invoke those as causes at all. You don't need to invoke minds or intentions, or in theology, you don't need to invoke spirits or gods or metaphysical causes. You can explain everything in terms of lower level fundamental physical causes. On the other hand, if mental causes add something to our experience as humans and what happens physically when we make a decision to do something and causes our bodies to do something, if in theologically, if God's intentions cause the Red Sea to part in some sort of metaphysical sense, or here with our Delta Quadrant Bajorans, if the spirits cause something to happen that results in Kes's physical body being healed. To me, if you can't explain those in terms of purely physical causes, that gives some credence to the idea that there are these higher level physical, non-physical, you know, mental or spiritual metaphysical causes. But if there's nothing kind of left over that's not able to be fully explained by purely physical causes, I think the skeptic in me, and I think Captain Janeway would agree with this assessment, at least at the beginning of the episode, she would say that, look, there's nothing here that can't be explained in purely physical causes if you go looking hard enough. So there's no need to invoke spirits or prophets or God or any of these higher level metaphysical causes to explain the events. So unless you can zero in on something that just plain violates the laws of nature that can't be explained in purely physical terms, the skeptic in me just says, wait a minute, we don't need to invoke these terms at all unless you can point to it and say, this is something that's just plain, literally unexplainable. And there's always the danger that maybe we'll explain it if we understand a little more. I mean, science is never complete too. It's not like science is finished, right? Even in the 24th century, they're still learning new things about the natural world. So even the fact that you can't explain it doesn't mean that there isn't a physical cause. It just could mean that we don't know what it is yet.
Well, it can be argued that that is part of the purpose of this episode, although I found zero evidence that that was the intention of the writers in the episode. It can be argued that the overall message of this is that whether we understand it in scientific terms or not, eventually we will. So Janeway's conflict comes when her ability to, quantify and science the science, it fails her. And she has no other option to save Kes except to literally take a step of faith. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, when she, and I have to say, she is boss when she is carrying Kes up those steps. I mean, I'm sure they did that with... But I got to tell you, she really looks awesome carrying Kes up those steps. And she steps into that gate and she takes that leap of faith. And the spirits kind of told her as much that, she had to take Kes through the gate and have faith. If there was any doubt, he said, you're both as good as dead. And so she had to have absolute faith. So in that moment, science had failed her, and all she could do was take that step by faith. And Chakotay tried to stop her, and Neelix tried to stop her. They didn't want her to do it. Let's think about this. Let's reconsider this. Let's have a confab. Whatever. The truth of the matter was, if she would have hesitated, Kes would have died. And so she picks her up, she carries her through, and takes that step of faith. And so science had failed her. But at the end of the episode, we get the quantifiable explanation for it all. And so the argument can be that this episode is saying that, there are things out there in the universe that we can't explain, but eventually, science will catch up with all the mystery of the universe. But, Colonel Jeff Williams is an astronaut, served on the International Space Station. And I just recently read a piece that he did, an interview that he did, and he said in that interview, I don't find a conflict with true science, genuine science with integrity and the scriptures. So, here's an astronaut, an American hero who served in the International Space Station, saying that there's concourse there between his own personal faith and science. And I find that refreshing. But for Catherine Janeway, for the first time in her life, I think she had to take a leap of faith. And at the end of the episode, they gave her the science, but you know what? It matters, but it didn't matter to her. Because it doesn't change the explanation doesn't change the fact that she did something she probably had never done in her life, and that is to take a leap of faith.
Well, there are so many parallel discussions happening inside this episode at the same time. I think it's really important to distinguish them from each other. Otherwise, we run the risk of conflating them. So one is the role of these higher level causes. And I think throughout the history of the relationship between science and religion here in the real world, there's been a history of attempting to locate, again, thinking of Judeo-Christian theology in particular, locate the actions of God as a divine being in the areas of explanation that we don't understand. So there's a lot of things we do understand. There's areas of causation and physical knowledge and events that we don't understand. So we point to those and we say, oh, that must be where spiritual things happen, or that must be where God interacts, or that must be where miracles happen, or that must be where, in this episode, the Delta Quadrant Bajorans spirits interact, right? In the area where science is inadequate. Adequate and doesn't seem to provide an explanation. But over time, what's happened is that we learn more and more and more, and the need for that those metaphysical causes to explain what we can't explain through science gets squeezed out of the picture as we learn more and more about how the natural world actually works. And there's something a bit theologically dissatisfying about that. If your faith in a divine being can get squeezed out of the picture as we learn more and more about science, you might argue that's a pretty weak justification for one's faith. Mm-hmm. So I think the deeper challenge is to try to find a way to harmonize natural causation with spiritual or metaphysical causation so that they don't conflict with each other. So as we learn more about the natural world, the divine isn't squeezed out of the picture. That's a more nuanced view about the relationship between scientific causation and metaphysical causation than just saying they contradict each other, and where one is true, the other one can't be true, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So that's one issue. Sure. And in theology, that's called the God of the Gaps theory.
God of the Gaps.
Yes. Yeah. That where there's a gap in our understanding, that's where God interacts. And as we learn more, God gets squeezed out of the picture. But that's theologically dissatisfying because you run the risk that God is squeezed out of your worldview altogether as we learn more and more and more about the natural world. So that's one issue. The other issue that I see, well, two more issues, but the second issue that I see is the issue of what is the relationship between these two different modes of justification? Are they identical? Are they different in some way? Are there different criteria you can give for these different modes of explanation? What you wouldn't want to do is you wouldn't want to confuse a spiritual explanation with a scientific explanation. For example, I think you can spell out criteria for a scientific explanation that religious explanations don't have to meet. For example, scientific explanations are often held to the criterion of falsifiability. A scientific theory is not taken to be a scientific theory unless you can give criteria for falsifying it. In other words, unless you can say this theory predicts blah, 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 and if it turns out that events don't actually unfold that way, you can falsify the theory. That's how science moves forward, by making a hypothesis and either verifying or falsifying that theory. So the idea that theories lead to predictable empirical consequences that you can then falsify a theory with, or give an alternative theory for, that's an important part of a scientific theory. And the problem with individual religious experience from an epistemic standpoint is that it doesn't seem like individual religious experiences are falsifiable. No one on Voyager can say to Captain Janeway, your religious experience didn't unfold the way that you said it did, because no one has experienced those events. Captain Janeway is the only one to have had those experiences.
Right.
So there's no way to publicly falsify her emerging alternative spiritual explanation for these events above and beyond what the doctor has to say. So I think it's important to be able to spell out the criteria for these different modes of explanation. I think it just seems obvious that by definition to me, private religious experiences are not falsifiable in any scientific sense. On the other hand, there are religious experiences that are publicly shared. I think you mentioned the New Testament before, that the experiences of, say, Jesus's disciples, for example, would be a communal experience that's not a private religious experience.
Sure.
And so that has different criteria than this private religious experience. But I would say in this episode, it seems like we're dealing with really subjective, private, ineffable experiences that only Captain Janeway is having, that no one else in the episode is sharing. Maybe even our Delta Quadrant Bajorans. So that's the second issue. And the third issue I wanted to raise is this issue of subjective religious experience. What's the role of personal conviction or personal commitment to a religious proposition you know, above and beyond what's objectively true, sort of factually and scientifically. And it strikes me as you were talking that this episode is really kind of an example of Kierkegaard's theory of what's important about religious experience. For Kierkegaard, the important thing about religious experience is not whether it's scientifically true or contradicts or is consistent with science. What matters for him is the personal conviction element, being willing to say, this matters to me and I'm convicted about this certain view or having had this certain experience. It's almost anti-rational. It's like the example that Kierkegaard uses is the example of Abraham and Isaac, Abraham being commanded to sacrifice his own son. And he says, look at the anguish of that moment where, you know, Abraham loves his son Isaac and he's being told by God to sacrifice his own son. And he's standing there on the mountain with his knife raised. And what a terrible moment that is. And it's a leap of faith to do something so horrific and so anti-rational because you have so much faith. And for him, that leap of faith in this anti-rational sense, despite all the evidence to the contrary, despite all the reasons not to do something, you have so much faith and it matters to you. And you've decided that that matters to you in a personal, non-scientific way, in a way that really matters only to you. It's you as the deciding factor. You know, Captain Janeway in this episode has to decide. She's being told the spirits are the only answer. And she has to decide, do I pick Kes up and walk right back up to that, you know, space Stargate, for lack of a better word, you know, whatever that construction was with the gate and the energy field and
Stargate SG Delta.
Stargate SG Delta, exactly. So Captain Janeway has to be the one to decide, am I going to pick Kes back up and walk to that doorway and try to walk through it or not? And it's only Captain Janeway can make that decision. And she has a bunch of evidence to the contrary. There's a danger that Kes and she will both be killed. And she decides that's the only way. And it's all on Captain Janeway's shoulders at that moment. And that's analogous to the Abraham and Isaac moment. You know, Abraham has these, you know, all the reasons not to kill his own son. And God says, you have to sacrifice your own son, Isaac. And he decides to pick up the knife. And of course, he doesn't end up doing it. But it's that moment of personal choice that matters for Kierkegaard's view of spirituality.
I'm glad you thought to mention Abraham and Isaac, because that's really what we were presented in this episode. Because quite literally, the spirit told her that the solution to the problem was to kill her. He said, you have to take her and kill her. She's as good as dead already. Take her, go through the gate. And at the end of the episode, that's really what we see is, you know, as Janeway is carrying her up through there, we really kind of see sort of a interesting reversal on Abraham and Isaac. It's Janeway and Kes. And, you know, she literally Kes's life is in Janeway's hands. And fortunately, the act of killing her at the end of the episode is what saves her.
So in my mind, this scene is actually a really interesting mashup of Kierkegaard's view of spirituality. We've got the Abraham Isaac story. We also have a little bit of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade with a leap of faith. And I would say we even have a little bit of Double Dare physical challenge going on.
Definitely Double Dare physical challenge, but it was all Jane. I mean, it was Janeway.
Double Delta physical challenge.
I think her guide told her that she was particularly hard. I think, or maybe it was one of the spirits said, you were pretty hard on yourself. And she was. I mean, you think about some of these physical challenges. I just knew, Zachary, when she was holding that stone, and we kept going back to her holding the stone, and the guide kept saying to her, again, what do you see? I just knew that any minute she was going to yell, there is one stone.
Well, speaking of the first part of this episode, when Captain Janeway encounters these Double Dare physical challenges, what do you think the important lesson was? I mean, we see that these challenges are presented to Captain Janeway largely because that's what Captain Janeway expects from a religious ritual, right? She expects to be challenged and she puts it all on her shoulders and she expects to be able to rise to the occasion and meet the challenge and sort of brute force her way through it. And the spirits or the Delta Quadrant Bajorans give her exactly what she expects. And that's her first run through this religious ritual before she has her Kierkegaardian enlightenment. On the other hand, I'm not really sure what the point of some of the imagery was. Why the rock in particular, and why having to put your arm inside this basket with an animal? It almost reminds me of like the Mouth of Truth, or the what they call the Bocca della Verità in Rome. And you see this in the movie Roman Holiday, where you have to put your arm inside the lion's mouth, and if you're lying, it's supposed to bite your fingers off, right? It's the mouth of truth. So I was kind of thinking some of this was a little bit like Roman Holiday or the Nicaran Holiday, this sort of spooky metaphysical stuff. Put your arm in the thing, and you know, it's something bad is going to happen to you. In this case, you get bit by an animal or a snake or something to that effect. But why these particular images? Do you have any thoughts on that? I'm not sure that I do, other than this is what Captain Janeway kind of projected into what a religious trial would be.
I think that's just it. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it was all about Janeway's own preconceived notions, and she admits to that as well. She says at the beginning of the episode, she says to Chakotay, "I imagine if we scratch deep enough, we'd find a scientific basis for most religious doctrines." So she goes into that with this idea that she's going to go through some kind of spiritual, physical trials. And again, I can relate to this to some degree, because when I first came to faith, I really thought that I had to do something in order to
earn your way into good graces. Yeah.
To earn the graces. And so when I first became a believer, I had, you know, it was the late 80s, early 90s, guys. I had, you know, kind of Sammy Hagar hair going on, and I had an earring, and, you know, I was a punk. And I went to church that morning, and I took my earring out and put it on the dashboard of my car, because I just didn't figure there was any way that they would accept me with an earring in my ear. But what I experienced in there really goes beyond explanation. But it's funny, because Zachary, I walked out of there, the first thing I did the following day was went and got a haircut, because I guess we all think that God likes his sheep shorn real tight. I don't know. But I went and got a haircut, and at that time, I thought that was necessary. But quite frankly, that's baloney. It really is baloney. It was an act of it was a physical act on my part to, I guess, try and earn those graces. So I think for Janeway, she thought that she could somehow earn the grace to save Kes. That, you know, she would go through some physical trial, and at the end of the day, there would be a scientific explanation. But that all failed her, because all of that, holding the stone and putting her arm in the basket and all the, you know, stand this certain way, she says, and hold this stone, tell me what you see. We don't know how long she stood there, but the episode kind of insinuates that it was an extremely long time, standing there in that weird position, holding and staring at a stone until she hallucinated something on it. And I unfortunately think that there are people out there who have experienced something that they call faith that, you know, really there's a quantifiable physical, you know, they've had a vision quest. And in fact, Chakotay says in the episode, "I remember when my mother taught me about the science underlying the vision quest. In a way," he said, "I felt disappointed. Some of the mystery was gone." I was going to say, and who knows, maybe that's one of the reasons why he drifted away from his faith, only to return back to it later in life. I don't know.
I'm actually a little disappointed we didn't get a chance to see Captain Janeway's spirit guide inside this episode. That's what I really want to know. What, you know, which animal is it? But speaking of individual religious experiences, I can actually really kind of relate to what Captain Janeway has gone through in this episode. And I know, listeners out there, some of you know me and some of you don't. And if you don't know me, and you may not care about the individual personal story here, but I was raised going to an Assemblies of God Pentecostal church growing up. And, you know, eventually I kind of became a philosopher. And, you know, that's kind of how you know me now. But, you know, as a teenager, I was very much going to church youth groups and church excursions, and that was kind of my upbringing, especially in the summers and winters, you know, during vacation times. And I remember this one winter, I went to a church ski camp, snow camp up in the mountains here in the Sierras. I think it was up in Sonora. And I remember very vividly, you know, one evening there where, you know, they had all the lights out and we were singing our songs, and then all of a sudden people start speaking in tongues. And this was a very fascinating experience because mm-hmm. I very kind of naturally was caught up in the experience of it all, to the point where I myself, you know, Zach, who became a logic teacher and a philosopher, was speaking in tongues back in, you know, maybe I'm undermining my credibility all left and right here, but I was speaking in tongues with the rest of the church youth group at about age, I don't know, 12 or 13, somewhere in there. And it's funny because you can kind of reverse engineer that experience. There's a scientific, naturalistic, maybe even a social or psychological explanation for that. And there's a religious explanation for that, right? So the scientific or social explanation is, well, you know, it was group peer pressure, or it was, you know, manipulation from church leaders getting, young people who don't know any better to get caught up in this kind of frenzy of an activity. Although you can say, well, how do you know it wasn't the Spirit of God, or how do you know it wasn't, you know, some sort of divine presence there that can't be explained psychologically? Certainly, what I can't deny is that I was there and I did that, right? I was there at age 13 speaking tongues at the church youth camp up in the mountains. And that's not something that makes sense to me now. In fact, in some ways, it makes more sense, right? It makes sense because I can give these alternative explanations. On the other hand, I still go, wow, that in some way, knowing myself, knowing my personality and my temperament, that doesn't make sense at all in some ways. So there's a tension between these two alternative explanations. And I would argue that's very much similar to what is going on in Captain Janeway's mind. She's had this individual experience. She's got two competing explanations that don't make sense to her, mm-hmm. and she doesn't know how to reconcile them. Although she keeps looking for these alternative explanations because that's who she is. Just like for me, I can go, oh, I can give 10 explanations for what happened when I was at age 13. That's not a religious explanation now that I couldn't give then. And that's part of my personality, just like Captain Janeway's personality, to do that. But Mike, you also mentioned this idea that Captain Janeway has to learn to kind of wait and experience what the spirits in this episode present to her, as opposed to trying to follow her own mode or her own model or her own expectations mm-hmm. about what the spiritual will be and how that spiritual revelation will sort of unfold to her. And frankly, I know a lot of people like this, and I don't mean to be critical of anyone, but I know people who are more than willing to speak for the divine and think they know, you know, every little nuance of what God expects for the world and themselves and for other people. And it's, in my mind, it's really presumptuous to not take a position of humility and speak for the divine in that way. And that's really kind of what Captain Janeway is doing, right? She's sort of taking her own expectations, and she thinks she's got it all figured out. She's going to, you know, she may not fully understand this particular instance, but she's got a scientific worldview that's adequate for all circumstances, and she's going to project that onto the divine. And her first foray into this ritual is living out her own expectations, and she comes to see the fruitlessness of that. And I think you could argue that Captain Janeway has to learn a position of humility here, that the spirits are actually driving the show and not her own expectations and not her own worldview. And so many religious people I know could benefit from just a little bit of humility and not speaking for the divine, not projecting their own expectations, and just waiting to see what, you know, God or the divine or the spirits or the prophets, depends which who we're talking about in the Star Trek universe, what unfolds, you know, and being willing to wait for an answer rather than trying to speak for the divine.
And that, Zachary, I think is really what viewers might miss when they're watching this episode. She's gone through days of physical, grueling tasks, torture, even. We don't know how long she stood there holding that heavy stone, staring into it.
All that finger painting is exhausting.
Finger painting and yes, and she's gone without food, she's gone without sleep. Then she sticks her arm in a basket and spends the next, I think it was 39 hours in a toxin-induced hallucination, thinking that she's dead, and the only comfort she gets is her guide says to her, "We all have to die sometime, Captain," as the coffin door closes. And to come out of that, again, this grueling physical emotional. I mean, don't forget the emotional aspect of this. She is desperately trying to find a way to save Cass. That's really what is weighing on her through the whole thing. And she's sending data back to the ship. And she just knows when she goes down there that she's going to go through some rituals and she's going to come out with a scientific explanation. And when the doctor says to her, "Captain, it appears that everything you went through was meaningless." She's in a crisis. And when Chakotay says to her at the end of the episode, "Captain, I don't understand this." And she says, "Neither do I." That's the challenge. And that was the moment when I think she really got it. And she really got what the spirits were trying to say to her too. So, you know, it was this trial and error, but then she finally realizes that, okay, at this moment in time, I don't have an explanation, but I'm going to do it anyway. And there's something very liberating about that too, I have to say, because I have been guilty in my own life of, you know, wanting to have everything figured out and all, you know, all the questions answered before I do something. I've been guilty of that. And I really believe, looking back on my life, that I've missed out on some really wonderful opportunities because I didn't just take a leap of faith and you know, as they said back in the 80s, just do it. I didn't just do it. And I really think I've missed out on some opportunities in my own life. And if Janeway would have waited for the scientific explanation, Kes would have died.
It's probably a vast oversimplification and probably not even true to say something to the effect that everyone prays or everyone reaches out to the divine when they're in a crisis. I don't think that's probably true for everyone. That's a huge overstatement. But it's probably a psychological rule of thumb, to tone it down just a notch, to say that for a lot of people, they become a little friendlier with the divine when they're in a crisis.
Sure.
They become more open to it for a lot of people. Not for everyone, for sure, but for a lot of people, I think people have this experience of, despite whatever skepticism they've had or despite their scientific worldview, that when someone's life is on the line or their life is on the line or the stakes are really high, that people become a little more open to divine intervention to work their way out of the problem. So when we get to see Captain Janeway having a little bit of that here, Kes's life is on the line, so she's willing to take... She's willing to pick Kes up and take a leap of faith at the end of the episode, despite all of her previous experiences and despite her worldview. And I think that's pretty consistent with what I've seen with you know, people in general when they're in a crisis.
I love her eloquent appeal, her prayer, as she's standing there seeing this beautiful vista. And, you know, I cite the story of it. It's this beautiful, eloquent, it almost seems well-rehearsed appeal. In the world of religion, I've
seen some great performative prayers.
I've seen some great performative, you know, King James prayers, because after all, we all know that God speaks King James English, right? But I've seen these wonderful performative prayers, and some of them were beautiful and eloquent and moving, you know, on a very emotional level. But in reality, she was so disappointed because I think she put so much in to the appeal, and she wanted to sound eloquent and she wanted to make a good case for Kes, and the disappointment she felt when the answer was, "Well, you already have the answer."
Well, Captain Janeway does put everything on her own shoulders, right? She thinks of herself as Kes's advocate, so she's going to be the best advocate she can.
Yes. But yeah, so, you know, she makes this appeal and finds out that even then she was being told it was meaningless, but she wasn't willing to accept it. It wasn't until the doctor says to her, you know, it was all for nothing, that the crisis come. And I love what she does. She goes right back down there and, you know, very Catherine Janeway, she's going to get in somebody's face and find out why. And I appreciated that about, you know, about what her character does in this episode. And I would say that if we're persistent in life, the answers will come. We just have to, you know, we just have to be persistent.
Well, I think a lot of people just don't give the divine credit, right? Even though they ostensibly are people of faith, they still feel like they have to kind of earn their approval, and they beat themselves up over it, and they don't give God credit, right? Mm-hmm. Or give the divine credit to say, oh, God, well, God's bigger than that, so he can deal with that. No big deal, right? I think Janeway has to learn a very similar lesson here. She's putting the entire situation with Kes on her own shoulders. She's trying to be the best advocate for Kes she can be. She's trying to run her way through the double dare maze to try to earn approval of the spirits, or the prophets of the Delta Quadrant Bajorans. And what she's not doing is giving the spirits in this episode credit, right? The spirits have got it under control. She needs to take a leap of faith. And when she does that, it ends up being okay. But she spends so much time putting pressure on her own shoulders, trying to earn her way through the maze, that she kind of misses the point that the spirits are already kind of have the situation under control if she takes a leap of faith. On this religious interpretation of the episode, yeah.
Sure. And I love what the one older gentleman says, the spirit says. He says, even when her science fails right before her eyes, she still has full confidence in it. He said, now there's a leap of faith. And that's a great point because, again, as I said earlier, I believe that everyone has faith in something. You know, mine is grace alone through faith alone, but everybody has faith in something. And there are many, many people out there, listeners perhaps, who have faith in science. And you know what? That's okay. But just as there have been times in my own life when my faith has failed, God hasn't failed me, my faith has failed me. I've had crisis of faith. Janeway's having a crisis of faith. Her science has failed her. And, you know, she's not willing to accept it. She's still going to fight to find the answers. And the spirit points out to her that too is a leap of faith. And so I think that it becomes apparent to Catherine Janeway that, okay, so my science has failed me, and yes, that's a leap of faith to still have confidence in it. So then the idea of her taking a literal leap of faith doesn't seem so bizarre or out there. And I think for maybe the first time in her life, she sees that, as I've mentioned a number of times, she sees that concourse there between science and religion, and it enables her to do something that she doesn't quite understand, and she's willing to take the risk because there are no other answers. And sometimes that's true in life. There really aren't any other answers. You just have to take it on faith. And, you know, perhaps one day you'll be able to quantify it or explain it in some scientific term, and that's okay. But perhaps not.
Well, even though in the episode here, I've tried to give some reasons, and my own conviction is really that the deeper philosophical project is to try to overcome this dichotomy between physical explanations and religious explanations, if you have a religious worldview, right? If you have a religious worldview and you think we live in a world that's governed by natural laws, the challenge should be to try to unify those in some coherent worldview. Otherwise, you just live in a bifurcated worldview that isn't coherent. And it's one universe. If it's one universe that we all inhabit, consisting of physical things and maybe metaphysical things, if that's one universe, then they should be a coherent mode of explanation. And that's a deep philosophical challenge for anyone with a metaphysical, spiritual view. So that's my view. But oftentimes, faith, popularly speaking, and definitely by Kierkegaard, is couched as being kind of anti-rational, that what matters is this leap of faith, clinging to your convictions despite all the evidence to the contrary, like Abraham and Isaac, or like Captain Janeway with Kes walking to the space stargate, the Delta Quadrant stargate. I like that. So given that popular view of faith as being kind of anti-rational or despite evidence to the contrary, it is very interesting that the Delta Quadrant Bajorans essentially point out to Captain Janeway way that she has so much faith in science that she is clinging to that scientific worldview despite all the evidence to the contrary, despite all the things that don't make sense, the experiences that no one else is experiencing, the things that aren't measurable and quantifiable. She's clinging to that just as much as religious people cling to faith despite all the evidence to the contrary.
Well, Zachary, we have passed the 1 hour mark. Do you want to wrap things up with any final thoughts you might have?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I honestly, this is not one of my favorite episodes of Voyager. I cannot count the number of times I have skipped this episode in a rewatch. In fact, when Kay first suggested that we talk about this episode, I frankly kind of rolled my eyes to myself, like, oh, not that episode with the Delta Quadrant Bajorans, right? No, I don't want to talk about that one. I was really skeptical. So I had to rewatch it three times before we recorded, before I felt like I really kind of understood the gestalt of this episode and came to appreciate it again, after really having not seen it in quite a long time, because I've skipped over it so much. So that said, I think it does a really spectacular job of covering these three different areas that we talked about at the beginning of the show. I think, you know, it reveals a lot about Captain Janeway's personal growth and personal character development, the relationship in her own mind, regardless of what's actually true, and the relationship of the role of science and the scientific worldview and her openness, increasing openness to new experiences. It also seems to lay bare the idea that there are these alternative modes of explanation. It raises all these epistemic questions. What defines a scientific explanation versus a spiritual explanation, and what's the relationship between those? Are they consistent with each other? Do they contradict each other? Can they be unified in some way? All the things we've talked about in the episode. And of course, this episode does a really good job of illustrating the role of a leap of faith, or the role of individual personal conviction in religious experience, or in taking action on religious experience, that in most cases defies scientific explanation, defies logic, defies science. There's lots of evidence to the contrary. And that moment of decision, you know, Captain Janeway has to decide, do I pick Kes up and walk to the gate, or do I let the scientific chips mm-hmm. fall as they will? Do I let the doctor's approach fail? In this case, it would have failed. Probably. And only Captain Janeway can make that decision. And all, regardless of how these two modes of explanation work out and what the relationship between them is, only Captain Janeway in this situation can decide what she wants to do. And most religious convictions are like that. You know, all the evidence in the world, all of the testimony, all of the scientific reasoning, none of that can determine for you what you're going to do about it. So it's this existentialist point that no matter how the chips fall in the epistemic discussion in this about this episode, it's ultimately up to Captain Janeway to decide what to do about that. And that's true of all of us about any of our experiences or any explanations that we seek. Only we can decide what to do about it and try to create the kind of world we want to create. And Captain Janeway has to ultimately decide, yep, I'm going to take that leap of faith, and no one can do that but her.
Zachary, I love that Catherine Janeway is willing to not just expand her comfort zone, but to really completely break out of her comfort zone in order to save Kes's life. And to me, it really speaks to the character of Catherine Janeway and the type of captain that she is. And I think that's the type of captain she demonstrated herself to be all through this series of Star Trek Voyager. To the contrary of what she felt at times, that her actions or inactions had led to her crew being stranded and, you know, the peril that they found themselves in. She, as you said, she carried all of that on her shoulder. I love the fact that, you know, in this moment, if there was ever any doubt in anyone's mind about the type of captain that Janeway is, she is going to completely, completely shake off any preconceived notions that she has about the universe and take a leap of faith at the end of this episode. Again, as I said before, I love it because at the end, it sort of presents two answers, and neither of them are right or wrong. There's a scientific solution, but on the other hand, there is a solution that is faith. It's, you know, it's mystery, it's mystical, and it again doesn't really say one way or the other. So there are probably some viewers out there who would watch this and say, well, the answer was faith, and someone else may answer that there was a scientific explanation, and both would be right, and yet not completely. So that's one of the things that I really appreciate about the episode. I love the fact that this was really a Catherine Janeway episode. Very little said or done by anyone else on the Voyager crew. You know, B'Elanna, very little. The Doctor had a little bit more than most. But even Kes, who's a central character, really, in this episode, you know, she played the entire episode unconscious, basically. So this was like all
an episode
about...
It's like being on an episode of General Hospital or something, right? Exactly. The main character gets to be unconscious on a hospital bed, you know, for four episodes in a row.
Exactly. And again, Robbie Duncan McNeil, who made his directorial debut with this episode, appeared in the episode, but he had no lines. There were no lines for him. So this was really kind of I agree with Brandon Braga, who said of this episode that it was kind of a Man Called Horse with Janeway. And he went on to say that she was on a spiritual journey. And I think that all of us, regardless of, again, what we have faith in life, you know, whether it's science or something else, I think we all go on spiritual journeys of one kind or another in life when our conventional wisdom or our own ideals or our own expectations, just as Janeway's expectations failed her in this episode, our expectations will fail us in life, and we're forced to go on a quest or a journey to, you know, to find answers. And sometimes at the end of those journeys, there aren't any answers really to be found. And, you know, to me, that can be somewhat satisfying. And I know that it could be frustrating for others. And still, I have friends who will say to me that eventually science will have an explanation for it. And I think that's great. And that's the beauty, I think, of Star Trek and these types of stories that they tell. They raise lots of really good questions, and they give you lots of meaningful answers. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's up for the viewer. It's up to the viewer to decide which answers satisfy them. And I think we have that in this episode. I hope that I hope our listeners have enjoyed the discussion. To Kay Shaw, our associate producer, I hope you in particular have enjoyed the discussion, because after all, this was your request. We do take requests here at MetaTrek. So certainly to our listeners out there, if you have ideas for the show or questions or comments, please reach out to us. And we have many different ways that you can do that. Join the conversation, make suggestions. We're always glad to tackle topics and subjects as they're presented to us. And if it's something that we've already discussed, we'll be more than happy to direct you back into our back catalog for you to, you know, give a listen to something, a conversation perhaps that we've already had on that topic. Well, Zachary, it's been fun talking about religious experience and Sacred Ground, one of my favorite episodes of Voyager. But this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look, everyone, at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It was kind of a creepy, scary, very intense episode. I really like this episode because it pulls you in and it seems very realistic. And
so you
I
like
love
Mary.
When it does it.
You're a
like
Mary fan.
Yeah, I like
so Mary was one of the ones I was kind of jokingly referencing, where it's like, well, you know, if you leave this one out of the rotation, it's not really going to hurt anybody.
Oh, I definitely thought you meant the next one.
No. Well, maybe so.
Earl Grey.
And there's these spooky aliens, and like they look like ferrets, and they're fighting, and like Picard is like possessed by this like thunder and lightning, and the crew are like gonna have a like are gonna go up against him, but they're like, no, we gotta respect the law, man. And it's like that, you know, if you respect the law, someone will end up being a cloud, man, you know.
To the journey.
What would you have done?
Well, I'd have like programmed my tricorder, open the door, lob it in, shut the door quick. Try that first of all.
So you would lob a tricorder probe
into the
holodeck.
Hope it doesn't break as it lands.
Well, you could wrap it in like some gaffer tape or something.
Some bubble wrap.
The 602 Club.
That feels like a turning point in the movie where they seem to go toward this moral of the story that they even repeated at the end, which is, you know, don't be so busy trying to make a life that you forget to participate in the present of where you are.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, no problem. We've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, just about anywhere you can get podcasts. And of course, you can always stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that you can help us keep all our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks that we have for you. These perks include things like early access to content, and there's more of that now than there has ever been, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and many, many more. We really appreciate any support that you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS Enterprise orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can help make it happen. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, as I mentioned earlier, or to send us your thoughts on anything that we discussed in this episode of MetaTreks, you can contact us in several different ways. You can contact us via a form. Just go to trek.fm/contact.
To leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar on our MetaTrek show page on the Trek FM website or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm.
On Twitter, our Twitter handle is @TrekFM.
On Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/TrekFM. And while you're on Facebook, find us in the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar.
We'd also like to invite you to leave a rating and review of MetaTreks on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show, but more importantly, it really helps show placement on iTunes as people are searching in iTunes. So if you haven't previously given us a rating or review, please go over to iTunes and do that. That would be wonderful, and we really appreciate your feedback. Well, Zachary, when you've not assumed the position and are trying to become one with the stone, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM as co-host of To the Journey, Trek FM's Voyager podcast, along with my co-host there, Suzanne Williamson, and our associate producer on MetaTreks, Kay Shaw. You can also find me in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Star Trek and philosophy with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, @ZacharyFruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Mike, when you're not communing with Delta Quadrant Bajorans waiting on the spirits, where can people find you on the Trek FM network and around the interwebs?
Well, Zachary, while I'm waiting, I'm most active on Facebook. That's where folks can find me most often, certainly around the Babel Conference. On Twitter, my handle is @cmichael1701. And if you're following me on Twitter and I'm not following you, please drop me a note and let me know. If you follow me, I want to follow you back. And I certainly always glad to have followers there on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm there as well, cmichael1701. Also around the network, you can find me on recent episodes of The Ready Room and Warp 5. We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the MetaTreks team from around the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher here at Trek FM. Our executive producers are Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. Our art director is Aaron Harvey. Richard Marquez is our production manager, and our Patreon manager is Brandon Shea Mutala. Zachary, we'd also like to give a big shout out to our four associate producers here at MetaTreks. Without these four fine people, we would not have Dilithium for the warp drive here on the Starship of Theseus. So we'd like to give a shout out to Patrick Devlin. You can connect with Patrick and say thank you to him at MagicDrop5 on Twitter. Kay Shaw, who is also one of Zachary's co-hosts over on To the Journey, you can connect with Kay at ChocoWeeble on Twitter. Norman Lau, our good friend Norman, at Starfighter1701. and our newest associate producer, Kit Lofstadt. You can connect with Kit on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is @MotherCat, and that's mother with a zero. Well, thanks everyone for listening to Metatreks, a Star Trek and Philosophy podcast. Until next time, when we will once again boldly go where no philosophers have gone before.